Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 25th of November, 2020. My name is Arthur, and you are listening to the grand hour here on 91.5 and or WMFO.org. I have a couple of programs this morning that are celebrating Thanksgiving. We'll jump into it with The Adventures of Sam Spade, The Terrified Turkey Caper. I don't know if I've played this particular episode before or if it was a reused script from maybe the Fat Man I played when we were still doing in-studio broadcasting. But this had an original air date of the 24th of November, 1950.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Tis I, sweetheart.
Sam! Oh, I was worried to death. This office, glass all over the floor, holes in the wall.
That was just business going on as usual during altercations, F.
Well, what was it all about, Sam?
They tried, Effie, just tried to pluck my feathers and cook my goose.
On Thanksgiving, too. How could they?
Oh, they were a mean lot.
Are you all right?
Hale and hearty. Every giblet in place and not a feather ruffled. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was heavenly. Mama had a turkey dinner, sage dressing, cranberry sauce, candied yams.
Hard cider?
A little.
Come clean, Effie.
Well, I had two glasses. Everyone was there. Cousin Gertie, Dwight, Mrs. Floss. I was disappointed when you didn't show up, Sam. Did you have Thanksgiving dinner?
Sure.
Where?
At the Helping Hand Rescue Mission, where there's plenty of free parking and never a cover charge. For further details, consult the report, which I will presently be down to dictate, on a tasty chronicle of foul play. The Terrified Turkey Caper.
For NBC, William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Sam Spade!
Oh, you were waiting for me.
Having Thanksgiving dinner at a rescue mission where Mama cooked a perfectly wonderful...
Thank your mother for me, F. Tell her I'll be over to break wishbones with her tonight. And to atone for my social indifferences, here's a little something I brought for you.
Oh, Sam! You shouldn't have. It's beautiful. What is it?
A blunderbuss.
A blunder what?
Bus, as in step to the rear of.
Oh. Well, what does it do?
Shoots, F. It's a gun. Our founding fathers used it in foraging for feathered food when they settled this abundant continent.
And it's mine.
To do with what you will.
But where did you get it?
Pencil poise?
Yes, Sam. But who gave it to
Pad
me?
Pad open?
Oh, yes, but I don't know...
Knees crossed?
Did you meet a founding father?
Don't peek. Date, November 24th, 1950. To Detective Lieutenant I.C. Kelsey, Homicide Detail, San Francisco Police. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, turkey. Dear Kelsey, this was a big week for the cranberry pickers, the butchers, the sage makers, and the stomach pill people. But for private detectives, it was strictly from hunger. My office door opened only twice a day, once to let me in and once to let me out. And when on Wednesday I heard a knock on the door, I went into a paroxysm of delight. Come in! Come in! Come in! Entrez-vous! Entrez usted! Irine! When I ran out of languages, I got up from behind the desk, walked to the door, and opened it. Standing there was a small, middle-aged man with a pink, bald head. His blue serge suit needed pressing, and he was nervously fingering a strawberry birthmark under his left ear.
Mr. Samuel Spade?
I am.
May I have a moment?
You may have several, but not in the corridor. It's not in my lease.
Oh, I'll come in.
Good, good, good. Well?
Well, you'll have to excuse me, Mr. Spade. I've had so few dealings with private detectives, I find it hard to begin.
Well?
Oh, perhaps I shouldn't have come at all. Goodbye.
No, wait a minute. Maybe I can help you.
Well, you see, I... Oh, what's the use? You won't believe me. Nobody does. I'd really better go.
Oh, now, wait. I'll believe you. All I ask is a chance. Now let's start with your name.
Oh, my name?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, my name. To begin with, you won't believe that. Oh, but I can verify it. Yes, I can. It's on the registration book of the Old Colony Hotel, in the 1943 phone book, and on my old driver's license.
Well, I'll have to know it before I can verify it.
Oh, yes, of course you will. It's Tom.
Well, now that's not so hard to believe.
Oh, you haven't heard the rest of it. It's Tom Turkey. There, you see, I told you wouldn't believe it. I'd better go.
No, now, let me be the first to believe you. Now, Mr., Tom, what's your problem?
Oh, dear, that's even harder to explain.
Well, now that I don't believe. But take a breath and jump into it.
Breath, yes. My name is Tom Turkey, and they're going to kill me for Thanksgiving.
Well, I had asked for it, and I had gotten it. And I sat back wondering who had gone to all the trouble to play this funny joke on me. I was looking at my hand to see if there was any itching powder on it where he'd shaken it when my phone rang. I lifted the receiver, swung around in my swivel, and gazed out onto the street. It was Al Kuchel calling, a private eye whose reputation was shadier than a mushroom seller.
Hiya, Spadey.
Al.
Haven't seen much of you lately, Spadey. Have to get together.
Yeah, well, so long.
Wait, I'll tell you why I called. I've had a pest in my office, keeps coming back. Thinks he's a turkey somebody wants to dress. I brushed him, but your name came up, and I just wanted to warn you. He might be in to see you.
I'm confused, Al. I never knew you to turn your back on a buck.
Oh, I don't want any of this one. His buttons are loose. My advice to you is to bounce him.
Well, we've never traded advice before, Kuchel. Why now?
Well, after all, we're in the same racket. If we can't help each other...
Oh, sure, Al, sure. I appreciate it.
Give me a ring. We've got to get together sometime.
Yeah, when I get a free night, we'll jimmy parking meters.
Yeah, we... Huh? Oh, yeah. Parking meters. I'll see you later, Spidey.
I turned back to the desk, and what I saw in front of me was an empty chair. Tom Turkey had taken wing. I got up and walked to the window, and a minute later, I saw him come out of the building downstairs and start to cross the street. And then I saw something else. A large 4-ton truck was tearing down the street, picking up speed. Instinctively, I shouted a warning, and at the last second, Tom Turkey scrambled from in front of the truck and disappeared into the alleyway. The truck roared up the street, and on its side was printed in gold letters, "Haynes, you drive it." There was nothing to say it wasn't coincidence, this near mishap, but somehow I found myself intrigued and wanting to hear more of the little guy's story. He said the Old Colony Hotel. On the way, I stopped at the library, found an old 1943 phone book, and looked. He was listed. Thomas Turkey, it said. Out of curiosity, I rang the number.
Hello?
I wonder if you can help me. I'm inquiring about a Mr. Turkey.
Turkey? This ain't his number no more.
I know.
Haven't had any calls for him for years. Screwy name.
Yeah, I know.
I knew a woman named Rabbit once.
Ringing. So was my wife, Henrietta.
This has a traditional ring.
Anyway, to make it short, I decided to run away. One day I drove to work. I parked my car in the middle of the Bay Bridge where the suicide note left it and disappeared.
Where did you go?
Oh, all over the world. I took a job on a boat. I did. On a boat. And then I settled in São Paulo, Brazil, under another name.
Now you're back. Why?
Well, maybe I got lonely. Maybe I got wiser. Maybe I felt I paid enough for my mistakes. Let's just say I'm back. I want to be with Henrietta.
Have you seen her?
I checked into this hotel and wrote her a letter saying I wasn't dead. I was back in San Francisco, and I wanted to come back to her if she still would have me. But I told her I wouldn't bother her unless she wanted to see me, that she could contact me here. That was a week ago.
And you haven't heard from her?
No, and almost right away these attempts on my life began.
I see. All right, what's her address?
3118 Monroe. Oh, she's taken her maiden name again. Black, Henrietta Blank.
Well, come on, let's go.
No, no, I'm not going to see her until she asks me.
Well, look, you're going to my apartment. Nobody will bother you there.
And you're going to see Henrietta?
That's right.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Spade. You do believe me. I think I'm really ready to face the world again now.
I deposited Tom in my apartment with instructions to open the door for no one but me, and then I proceeded to 3118 Monroe in the high rent district. I was ushered through a comely portico by a Japanese maid who told me to wait in a study heavy with mahogany. In a moment, two people came in. The woman wore a black dress, silver pendant, flat shoes, and a complexion the color of apple meat. She was Miss Henrietta Black and or Mrs. Tom Turkey. The man turned out to be Leander Luce, the lady's attorney, business manager, and canasta partner.
You say you have something important to discuss with me, Mr. Spade?
I do.
I hope you don't mind my asking Mr. Luce to be here.
Not at all.
Well?
Mrs. Turkey, I've just talked to your husband, Tom.
Mr. Spade, if you please.
I say something?
A rather feeble attempt at comedy, Mr. Spade.
Well, I wasn't trying for laughs. You are Mrs. Turkey, aren't you?
I was.
You undoubtedly still are.
I've expected to hear another one of these cruel jokes about my name.
At Thanksgiving time, Mr. Spade, someone was always going to stuff Tom, baste him, dress him, slice him.
This season, they're going to kill him.
They are not going to kill him. He is already dead.
He's not dead, Mrs. Turkey, and you should know it.
I should.
Yes, he sent you a letter saying he was back in San Francisco and wanted to see you.
Mr. Spade, this has gone absolutely far enough.
Not quite. What about the letter?
I know of no such letter.
I see. Well, thank you for your time. I'm sorry I bothered you.
Yeah, you used bad judgment in coming in the first place.
Yes, maybe you're right. There was falsehood in this someplace, Lieutenant, and it stuck out like a fat girl in slacks. The only thing to do was to go back to my apartment, get Tom Turkey, and confront Mrs. T with her husband in the flesh. But when I got back to my apartment building, I spotted in rapid succession, one, an ambulance, two, a police car, and upstairs, outside my half-opened apartment door, I spotted three, you.
I've been expecting you.
What's going on, Kelsey?
Yeah, serious, Sam, serious.
Who's that bald-headed man moving around the apartment?
That's McCracken, the new medical examiner, checking a stiff on your rug.
I stepped around you, Lieutenant, and pushed the door all the way open. I saw McCracken kneeling over the body and a couple of men from homicide taking photos. I moved into the room feeling nothing good. A little guy had given me a job, and while I was yakking with his wife, somebody got to him. And in my apartment, where I'd stashed him. McCracken stood up, and I looked down at the body. Then I looked again. Who I saw wasn't Tom Turkey at all. It was the late Private Eye, Al Kuchel.
You are listening to the weekly adventure of radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. You Friday fans of Sam Spade, there's mystery on Saturday evening, too, on NBC. Tomorrow, the man called X sets out on another mission of danger and intrigue in some far-off corner of the earth. Herbert Marshall stars as the man called X, a man without a name who travels the world over protecting his country's interests. He lives by his wits and his business is danger. He is the man called X, tomorrow over most NBC stations. For Top Sunday Listening, it's another broadcast of The Big Show on NBC. This Sunday, your stars include Fred Allen, Jack Carson, Mindy Carson, Ed Archie Gardner, Ed Wynn, and many, many more. And Tallulah is your MC as usual. This Sunday, it's The Big Show on NBC. And now back to the terrified turkey caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
While the men from Homicide were taking pictures, etc., you and I, Lieutenant, were going round and round on the question, if I didn't kill the man found in my room, who did? And you were sufficiently impressed with my insults, Kelsey, not to hold me for the murder. We bowed to each other and I left. Thinking back to the truck that had almost run Turkey down, I went to the Haynes U Drive truck rental garage.
Yeah? What do you want?
I'm a detective. Could you give me a list of names for everybody who rented a truck from you during the past few days?
Sure.
He handed me a big registration book, and I read every name for the past week. For the first 5 days, they all seemed to be nice, normal, abnormal names. And then, under the rentals for the day before, was the name of John Smith. John had given his address as 7200 Kearney. And I happen to know that Kearney only goes up to 2000. The dispatcher said that Smith had returned the truck about 3 hours before. And he remembered him as an ugly, heavy-set, and rough-voiced character who looked like an ex-longshoreman. They had already washed the truck, so the fingerprints were all loused up.
Well, it's Mr. Spade again.
Look, I'd like to speak with Mrs. Turk... Miss Black, if you don't mind.
Come in.
Thank you.
This way, into the den.
Right.
Well, I was sure you'd look into this affair a little more and realize that it was just a blind alley, a hoax of some kind.
Where's Miss Black?
Oh, she's upstairs, lying down. The whole affair has upset her, and she asked not to be disturbed. I think the wisest course of action for you, Mr. Spade, is just to let the matter drop.
You can't let a murder just drop, Mr. Luce. The police wouldn't hear of it.
Huh? Murder? Who?
An unfrocked private detective named Al Kuchel.
Well, what does this have to do with Henrietta Black?
Al Kuchel called me earlier today and said that Tom Turkey was a crackpot, a little man with delusions. He tried to top me off taking his case.
He sounds like a perceiving man.
Well, he didn't perceive ending up in my apartment with a bullet in his head.
Well, that's too bad, but I still don't
I left Tom Turkey in my apartment for safekeeping, and when I returned, he was gone and Kuchel was dead.
Well, that explains itself, obviously. This detective knew that Tom Turkey was a phony. And Turkey killed him.
It can figure that way. And a number of other ways.
Mr. Spade, I have no desire to sit here trading subtleties with you. As yet, no one has demonstrated that the real Tom Turkey actually exists alive. Now, until you do have something more concrete and less mythological, Miss Black requests that you do not come around opening up old wounds.
You've made an eloquent point. Just tell me one thing.
If I can.
When did Tom Turkey disappear? I mean, what month, what day?
It was, 1943, November. But I'm not sure of the exact day. I think it was in the third week.
Could it have been on Thanksgiving?
Very possibly.
I returned thoughtfully to my office and did a little rapid mental arithmetic and came up with a number 7. From November 23rd, 1943 to November 23rd, 1950 was 7 years to the day. And I pondered this. What did the number 7 mean to the life or death of Tom Turkey? I had just hit upon the answer and was crying Eureka when my office door opened, unknocked, and a visitor came in unannounced. He was ugly, heavy-set, and looked like an ex-longshoreman. I waited to see if the voice checked.
You, Spade?
Who shall I say is calling?
Captain John Smith. And here's my calling card.
The first bullet grazed my shoulder and tore the padding out of my coat. The second bullet hit the water cooler and it crashed over, water and all on top of me. Where the third bullet hit, I wasn't sure at the time because darkness came rushing through my head like a freight train. When I opened my eyes again, I expected to see St. Peter checking my ID card. But all I saw were the dust balls under my desk and a fly bathing himself in a pool of water spreading slowly over the floor. There was blood on my hand, but it came from a glass cut. I was in shambles, but alive. Captain John Smith had shoved off, obviously thinking his bullets had done their work.
Homicide, Lieutenant Kelsey.
Sam Kelsey, have you found anything more about Tom Turkey?
Nothing, Sam. Frankly, I'm beginning to wonder if there is such a guy.
Well, clever Kelsey, a few minutes ago, a gorilla by the name, believe it or not, of Captain John Smith just tried to kill me in my office.
Oh, go on, Sam. I find it hard to think.
You find it hard to think, period.
Really, Sam? Did you get him?
No, but my office is a wreck, and there's a hole blasted in my wall big enough to put a basketball in.
What did he use, a bazooka?
I figured dum-dum bullets.
Dum-dum? Well, that's illegal, ain't it?
Kelsey, doesn't it strike you as significant that every attempt on Turkey's life has been vicious, as if someone not only wanted to kill him, but also mutilate him?
Yeah, now that you mention it. Somebody probably wanted to make identification difficult.
Even dead, they didn't want anybody to know who he was. Now, listen carefully, Kelsey. This is real deep. Tom Turkey disappeared on Thanksgiving of 1943. A person has to be missing 7 years before he can be legally dead and his insurance collected. Now, if someone had Turkey insured, they could collect the day after this Thanksgiving, if Turkey didn't show up before.
You mean somebody's trying to kill him for the insurance?
I would say so, Kelsey. I would say so. Now, hurry up and find him. When I put down the phone, I heard a heavy pounding. For a minute, I thought it was in my head, until I turned to face the door, and standing there was a small pilgrim with bandy legs in black stockings, pantaloons, white-collared coat, and stovepipe hat.
Hallelujah!
He wore silver buckles, and what he was pounding on the floor was an 18th-century blunderbuss.
Hallelujah! Have I got the right place?
Well, offhand, I'd say so. If you're looking for Captain John Smith, he just left. Pocahontas is expected any minute.
Now, don't you go trying to confuse me. I'm too thirsty.
What's on your mind, Pilgrim?
Well, I'm looking for a fellow named Dan, I'm so thirsty, I forgot.
Sam Spade?
That's it. Oh, you broke your water bottle, huh?
Yeah.
Good. That stuff's poison anyway. Hallelujah. Hey, say, do you happen to have any hard cider around?
Fresh out.
Oh. I'm kind of thirsty, you know. Any type of corn squeezings?
Here, try this, Dad.
Well, yeah.
Good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You like that, huh? Oh.
Well, follow me. But before we go, do you suppose we could have a little something for the road? It's bitter cold.
I gave him a little, but not too much, because I didn't want him to lose his way. He walked me right down Market Street so he could look in the liquor store windows. He said it gave him a comfortable feeling to know there was so much good in the world. And then we turned right a few blocks until we came to the Helping Hand Mission. Across its gray front, a banner promised special holiday food and comfort to the unfortunate. And on the street in front of it, there was a brass band sending out signals to the fraternity that any minute the great feast of Thanksgiving would begin. The band members and other volunteer workers were all dressed as pilgrims, a quaint conceit. My pilgrim led me to a dark corner of the clubroom, and sitting there unhappily was none other than Tom Turkey.
Hello, Mr. Spade.
Oh, hello, Tom. What happened to my apartment? And why did you run away?
Well, I was afraid. You told me not to answer the door until you came back.
Yeah.
Well, somebody knocked on the door and said it was you, so I opened it, and two men came in.
Tell me, was one of the male Cuccio?
Yes, the detective. Yeah. The other man was a big, ugly-looking fellow, and when they saw I was alone, they started arguing.
About what?
Well, the detective said that now that he brought the ugly man there, he wanted his money.
Yeah.
The ugly man pulled a gun, and they started to fight. Oh, dear, I slipped out the door, and when I was halfway downstairs, I heard a shot and kept on running.
Well, Al Kuchel is dead.
Oh, my. I thought so. This was the only place I could think of to hide. Oh, when Henrietta finds out I've been mixed up in a murder, she'll never take me back.
Henrietta. Hey, tell me, did your wife ever have any insurance on you?
Oh, before I ran away, she did. A $50,000 policy, but, oh, that would have lapsed by now.
Maybe. Did it have a suicide clause in it?
A suicide?
Yes.
Well, no. No, it didn't. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd like to talk to Henrietta, wouldn't you? All right, here's her phone number. Call her up and tell her where you are.
Oh, dear, I don't think I could. I'm too frightened.
You've got to do something to help yourself. If you don't, by midnight, you might be a cold turkey.
Oh.
I'm sorry, it just slipped out.
All right, I'll do it.
Well, he went and made the call. When he returned, he said that a man had answered who said Henrietta would come down and pick Tom up. He didn't want to wait, but I sat on him. The pilgrim brought us a dish of turkey dinner, saying he couldn't stand food himself, and we munched a spell. In a little while, a limousine pulled up in front of the mission with someone in back whom I couldn't see. The chauffeur stepped out and came in inquiring for Tom Turkey. It was Captain John Smith himself. And when he saw me, a look of shocked surprise came over his unhandsome face. Hoping to catch him off balance, I dove at him. It was the liveliest thing that has happened at the Helping Hand Mission in years. And we had a good house, too. Money was even changing hands. And when I heard the odds starting to go against me, I realized I'd better come up with something.
Here, use this, partner.
And I did. The bandy-legged pilgrim shoved his blunderbuss right in my hand. And I swung. Smith dropped like pheasant on the wing. I looked up. The passenger from the limousine was just coming in.
What's the meaning of this?
It means, Leander Luce, that you're not going to carve Tom Turkey up for your Thanksgiving insurance policy.
Hallelujah! Drumstick, anyone?
Period. End of report.
Sam, I don't understand.
Well, it's as plain as the cranberry stain on your dress, Seth. Luce, as Henrietta's business manager, had her power of attorney. And secretly, he kept making the payments on Tom Turkey's insurance policy.
Oh, and then he'd collect for Henrietta and keep the money himself.
Effie, sometimes your lightning mind frightens me. Now, go type that up.
The man who killed Al Kuchel and tried to kill you, was his name really Captain John Smith?
Now, Effie, could we have a Thanksgiving caper without a Captain John Smith? It wouldn't be right.
It was a coincidence, wasn't it?
Well, if you promise not to tell anyone.
I won't.
His real name was Michael Giuseppe Yablonsky Smith. I called him John for short.
You're so kind.
Are we going over to your mother's for cold turkey snacks?
Well, all right, but I don't think there'll be much left.
Oh?
You see, my cousin Gertie couldn't find her little boy. And Mother phoned and said they just found him.
Mm-hmm.
He was inside the turkey, eating his way out.
Effie, is there no way to curb that tongue of yours?
Yes, sir. There's one way.
Well, come here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade was played by Stephen Dunn. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Script for tonight's adventure by Larry Roman and John Michael Hayes. Musical scoring by Lud Gluskin, conducted by Robert Armbruster.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Before that FCC obligation, we heard The Adventures of Sam Spade, The Terrified Turkey Caper, with an original air date of the 24th of November, 1950. I'm going to conclude today's show with a Columbia Workshop psalm for a dark year. Indeed, it has been a dark year. This has an original air date of the 9th of November, 1941. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM. And or WMFO.org. Thanks.
The Columbia Workshop presents program number 26 of 26 by Corwin. Psalm for a Dark Year. An ode of thanksgiving, written and directed by Norman Corwin, with an original musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Semler.
are willing, join us now, the living and the dead alike. Sit round our votive table and give thanks where thanks are due. We shall give thanks tonight for song and bread and such a thing as love and dogged hope and for the guarantee of morning somewhere at some season. You must bring with you to the feast an offering. It can be little, one good grape, a grain of cinnamon, a sentiment, three bars of an old folk song, half a notion, a living thing that's glad of living, be it a mosquito fresh from lava or a floating spore. Sit where you will. There are no place cards here and no priority. The good right hand of fellowship is at your left, and at your right, perhaps, an antique pharaoh or a medieval saint, a poet temporarily run out of couplets, or a plumber just arrived from the installing of a sink. Please note there is no head to this round table. Instead, an empty chair reserved for any perfect man, and therefore fated to be empty. First now, the breaking of the bread. Who will say grace? St. Paul, will you kindly?
He that eateth unto the Lord, for he giveth God thanks.
There will be music such as this throughout, for song is celebration, whether it is tuned to joy or woe or to the passions in between. We who are thankful give up thanks for music and the instruments of music and the makers of the instruments of music, yea, the sistrum and the dulcimer, the psaltery, the tabor, the cithara, the sackbut, and the looping horns. Listen to the big and buxom bulls. The gentle fiddles gambling across the staves. The piquant flute. The pastoral and plaintive oboe, singing of nostalgias we must always know. And the celeste, to which the planetoids prefer to dance. Also, that wondrous instrument which can speak words and give them meaning, inflect them, playing on the mind, the spirit bowstring. The human voice, the various and sweet and pungent human voice, now seraphim, now Satan. Oh, this is a hearty congregation, great old Greeks, and grocer's clerks, and young maids from Carolina looking for careers in New York City, and a shipping clerk from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, two emperors of China, and a mild professor from Ohio, and a girl named Rhoda with rheumatic fever, farmhands, and a locomotive engineer, and sailormen, and actors' agents, and a lissom tightrope walker thankful for a solid rope beneath his feet. Each is thankful in his fashion, and his measure.
I, for the earth and weathers, being a farmer, for the sun, which is good, and the rain, which is good, and for the rising before dawn, and the frosty air, and the placid animals, to whom I am the god of feed, the giver of the corn and grain. And I am thankful for the day, which is good, and the night, which is good, and for the hard-won sleeping, which is also good. And I am thankful for the plow in my hand, and the tilling of the land in fall, for crops to be sown in winter, and the tilling of the land in spring, for the Indian corn of summer. I am not thankful for potato bugs or the maize smut, but am for the well-framed orchards and the grafted trees and the gathered harvest.
I am thankful for the day which is good. I am thankful for the night which is good.
And I am thankful for the sun.
I am thankful for the rain.
I am thankful for the plow in my hand.
I for the bay at low tide. I'm an eel fisher and a clam fisher. For the flats at low tide, I guess, and the salty smell. For my clam rake and spade, I guess, and the spear I use to snag eels with, and the bellboy off by the shoals. And then the seagulls which circle overhead and glide along the beach all day looking for clams, too, like me. And I like to think sometimes of the thin rim of dried salt on the spit of sand where the last wave breaks when the tide's going out, and of the bright days when the water is blue, and the gray days when the water is gray. I'm thankful to God for clams and eels and low tide, I guess.
I am thankful to God for clams and eels. I am thankful to God for clams and eels and the low tide.
I, being a mother several times over, am thankful for the love of it and the pain of it. For the growth up from the crib and the teething and all the trouble and the coming out of trouble. For the cured abscess of the ear which Emmy had, getting better the way it did after we were so worried and sat up all night for two nights and didn't get a wink of sleep. Yes, and for Charles getting over being tongue-tied and Joe, the wild boy, getting married to such a fine girl as Louise and settling down. And for my husband, Donald, to have lived to see his eldest daughter, Hannah, married and bringing up a nice family. And for the letters that the children write me whenever they can, and the cards they send me on Mother's Day, and for the radio when it gets lonely, especially in the wintertime when all the summer folk have gone away. For all these things and many others, I am thankful.
I am thankful for the love of it and the pain of it. I am thankful for the love of it, thankful for the pain of it.
What of the season? Shall we not say thanks for seasons and the zones between them, when they are neither here nor there, but surely coming? For the time in March when the crocus goes to town and the robin makes reconnaissance and the icicle is given orders to relax. For the time in June when the laziest bud, the last to leaf, says, all right, I am ready. Summer may begin. Bring on the south wind, the cicadas, and the bees that I've heard so much about.
Oh, surely, sure. Let this be celebrated in our best tradition by a song. By not too young a song, since spring and summer are an ancient team. A song, let's say, of summer's coming in. It must be old, but fresh, familiar, yet a little different each time met with as summertime herself.
Summer is a-coming in, lover is a-coming in.
Growing seed and blowing feed and spring and wood and you and you. Sing, boo-boo-boo.
You and me and branches and for cast a hoe and cow a hoe and pull a cross and walk a cross and merry sing, boo-boo.
Summer is a-coming in, sing, boo-boo.
I rise to thank the master painter of the year.
Well, who's that?
October. No Louvre in the world is big enough to hold his landscapes. He is exhibited in every tinctured leaf and hung in every meadow. Have you seen his skyscapes?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, indeed. They say he mixes pigments out of elemental stuffs and ranges far afield. Did you know his greens come from a special patch of the Aegean? His reds from Yuma in the eyes of Bengal tigers and the powdered beaks of tropical toucans? His oranges are skimmed, they say, from surfaces of rising moons.
Well, where do his tints of hazel come from?
For hazelnuts.
His plum colors?
From plums.
His fawn from fawns?
Precisely.
Is he not a marvel then, October?
Yes, he is.
Not worth a canticle?
Oh, worth several. Here is one for now.
If you really want to know about October,
come, this is mockery, this festive hour.
A mockery? How now?
This breaking bread while famine grins in every land. This music while the whistling bomb sets pitch for all the sharp-tuned instruments of death. This talk of landscapes when the color of the earth is red and growing redder, and you know it. Are you proposing thanks?
Yes, we are.
Why, if Satan himself was sitting here among us, he could reasonably proffer thanks to all of our kind for many favors done him and continuing. His horsemen thunder down the ways. His legions multiply like festering bacteria. How can our thanksgivings be unaffected knowing this?
Look, no empire built of darkness and disease of soul shall give us pause. The interlocking fury of free men will, like a blinding and a sterilizing shaft of light, nullify such decay. What comes of festering bacteria in the sunlight?
It doesn't matter. While we speak, new fallen angels plummet from the skies like a malignant hail. The air is a shriek with misery. Yea, the earth is fevered. Pity and mercy both are exiled to a foreign star. And charity's aghast to see a million of our brothers writhing in the puddle of their blood.
Has there ever been a tempest time did not outride? The truth that was mixed in with the molten ores when still our smoking planet sought a place among the systems, that truth awaits extraction like a rare but mighty radium deep in the bowels of the earth. Those who have held it shining in their hands, never will be countervailed.
Never countervailed.
Though crucifixion test it, and armies of defenders stagger backward through the night, once we understand, no weapon in the hand of any host of any hell can strike asunder man from man. Brothers are not for long divisible. Let us be thankful now for this.
I verify this thing. I, who have come a long distance to this table and must go far hence, I verify this thing, that brotherhood is not so wild a dream as those who profit by postponing it pretend. It cannot be that common kindness and a working plan are more bizarre imaginings than that a man should squeeze the world into a room and speak across it casually and be heard. I am a wanderer. I was born in exile as my father was and as my children will be. I am of a race which lives in every clime and under every flag except its own. I verify this thing. Let now the ram's horn of my father's tribe resound a note of thankfulness for perseverance and for law, for strength out of adversity and order out of chaos. Listen to it. As the shrill wind blowing down the wrinkled plains of Shinar, through the selfsame wildernesses, past the hoary head of Sinai, blows the melancholy shofar. Sounds the shofar down the ages. Egypt, Jericho and Persia, Greece and Rome, and the dispersion. Pogrom, ghetto, inquisition. Past the rise and fall of empires, past the ebb and flow of eras, through the gauntlet of affliction, index inhumanitarum, pox and phthisis, plague and cannon, still, above the blare of trumpets, still above the brass of hatred, blows the horn of benedictions. Men have listened. Men have listened. They will listen yet tomorrow for the horn of benediction. For the horn of benediction.
May I speak for a moment, having but a moment left to speak in? I, too, am listening for a horn to blow, one which will call me from this time and place to another time and place. In this, my 92nd year, my eyes grown dim, my hearing poor, sleeping most of the time, the foothills of sleep before I reach the mountains, I am thankful for still clear memories, both big and little, happy and sorrowful. Of the dress I wore at Lincoln's second inaugural ball, of meeting Edward on a sleigh ride one December night when the moon was new and Mount Toby lay frozen under stars that seemed so low you could almost touch them. Of the morning Ralph was born, of how little Edwina died of the diphtheria. Of all the other memories, the many, many other things too full to hint at, too many to contain. I joke with my grandchildren when they come to see me now. I tell them I'm like a minute man, ready to go at a moment's notice.
Will you pardon my appearance, good friends all? I am but lately risen from the grave. one of 100 who were stood one morning, one bright morning, between a dozen muzzles and a wall. Tonight it rains where we were lowered in the ground, a rain of mid-November falling cold upon the countryside, spreading its sorrows over, cautioning the earth that winter's coming, winter in the bone and winter in the flesh and winter on the clean-swept hearthstone. We who are so early quit of this sweet place, young and unready for the quiet, loving the tug of the wind and the swaying grass, the pillowing breasts of our beloved, and the laughter of our children, loving the look of the day in the east, but seeing it no more, turned away and face to face with night. We who are solemn with dust upon our lips, whisper now our thankfulness in chorus, that we have been noted, that we shall not be forgotten, that good men, good understanding men, have noted that we shall not be forgotten. For this much thanks.
Sons of men, daughters of the mingled lovers of the many tribes who make us what we are, brothers, sisters by the millions, sitting with us at this table, encircled round us through the far, wide-spreading states. What year this is, we shall not soon forget. Remark it, each of you belonging to it. This year shall skulk among the blackest annals ever. Pitied, wondered on, and sung about as long as our posterity looks back to see the how and why of what has gone before. None of us makes pretense to himself of tranquil temper. There are no barefoot pleasures in these hobnailed times. The world is burning. It is burning. Flame is never subtle in its ways. It has a pattern all can recognize. We smell the smoke and feel the scorching air and see the embers snatched up by the winds and blown this way and that. But we are thankful, thankful in this graceless year for the strong joy of the challenge, for defiance in the nostril and the weapon in the hand. Shall we despair, who've suckled freedom on the brew of vintages of wrath? Shall we be thankless for the passions stirring in our blood? The love of country, of each spine of cactus and each particle of mist? Shall we be thankless for the way we walk, fearlessly, not stealing glances backward? For the way we talk, for scorn and laughter and the clenching of the fist? Come, come, Americans, come now and praise the broken bread together and the fiddle and the tilling of the land. The bellboy by the shoals, and Joe, the wild boy, getting married to Louise. Praise now October and the Song of Songs together. Praise the men who never shall forget. The steel mills working through the night. The rifle factory, the weapon in the hand. Arise now and give thanks where thanks are due.
I've been listening to Psalm for a Dark Year A Thanksgiving Ode, written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin as program number 26 in the Columbia Workshop special cycle, 26 by Corwin. The musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. The principal narration was done by Mr. Corwin. Others in the cast were Martin Gable, Parker Fenley, Ann Bowley, Frank Lovejoy, Martin Wolfson, Hester Sundergaard, Sidney Smith, Gene Ellen, Ian Martin, and Charles Carroll.
To the country just the other day to see my Uncle Bill and sort of pass the time away. I asked him how he'd been since last had passed his way, and he rubbed his chin. Here's what he had to say. My wife's been sick, the young'uns too, and I'm darn near down with the flu. The cow's gone dry and them hens won't lay, but we're still a-living, so everything's okay. The hawks took the collar and they've all done died. The bees got mad and they left the hive. The weevils got the corn and the rain rotted the hay. But we're still a-living, so everything's okay. The porch rotted down, that's more expense. And the darned old mule, he tore down the fence. The mortgage is due and I can't pay. But we're still a-living, so everything's okay. The cow broke in the field and eat up the beans. The darn rabbits, they got the turnip greens. And my ma-in-law just moved in to stay. But we're still a-living, so everything's okay. My land's so poor, so hard and yeller. You have to set on a sack of fertilizer to raise an umbrella.